Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Wednesday, 15 December. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you loud and live from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. Our last live show for the day, but we've recorded shows through to the 24th next Friday, back 10th of January. On the show today, chatting with our common man partner, talking Adcock update, MTN Nigeria. They got the 3.5 gigahertz spectrum. It's 5G. It's small, but it's moving in the right direction. Vikas Fustenberg, head of interest rates at Future Growth, on rates and inflation in 2022. I think this is going to be a big story. And John Bilton, head of global multi-asset strategy at JP Morgan, talking the survey they do. They look at the various different parts of the market. A great conversation with him. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Eskom's choice environmental compliance costing $300 billion or closure of 16,000 megawatts of production. Of course, 16,000 megawatts is pretty much half of the availability, in fact, a little over half. Business Day, SA officially off UK travel red list in time for holidays as the UK discovers that viruses travel with or without aeroplanes. Morning markets, US was red overnight, S&P off 0.75%, NASDAQ down 1%. In Asia, Sydney's down 0.4%, Tokyo a handful of points, less than 0.1% in the red. Commodities, red overnight, gold 1,770, Brent 72.85, palladium still falling 1,635. Rand 16.10. Top 40 opening call, about 40 points to the green, and that's a little under 0.1%. That as Tencent trades up 0.1% in Hong Kong.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Carmen Mepelwani, Portfolio Manager, Absa Asset Management. Carmen, appreciate the early morning time. Adcock Ingram came out with a trading update yesterday. I have to be honest, of the sort of medical health stocks on our market, I tend to forget about Adcock Ingram, which is perhaps not fair to them. They struggled last year when we weren't going anywhere. We didn't get flu, so we didn't buy any OTC products. Is it a stock on that you keep an eye on? Do you think it has potential?
Morning. So as you mentioned, one that's generally below the radar, twofold. One, a lot smaller in terms of market cap, but more so in terms of liquidity. So it makes it a lot harder to trade.
Yeah, I hear you on that. And the liquidity, of course, because they've got that giant shareholder holding, 70-odd%. MTN announcing that they've got successfully bid for one of two 3.5 gigahertz spectrums in Nigeria. This is the 5G. In truth, I mean, probably a small statement, but again, just you know, moving in the right direction and not insignificant for MTN to really bolster in what is their largest market.
Absolutely. It would have been unusual if they did not bid for it. They were one of three bidders, so successful in terms of that respect. And obviously, Nigeria is trying to be Africa's biggest network spectrum by 2025. But I think what's more interesting about this story is who did not win in terms of the second win. And that was Bharti Airtel, which obviously is the second largest carrier in Nigeria. So they lost to a company called Mayfab Communications, which interestingly does not even have a working website. So not much known about it, but this does give MTN sort of a first move advantage in respect of this 5G spectrum.
Yeah, and absent of a working website for a mobile operator. I mean, okay, maybe they're working on it. I mean, MTN of itself, it's had a spectacular year. It's just looking a lot better. I mean, Vodacom has done the deal up in North Africa. That's not insignificant. Do you have a preference between the two, maybe both, maybe neither?
Yeah, so the difficult part is, you know, as you've mentioned, MTN's done really well year to date, almost up 200%. So the question is there more value left in the stock?
Yeah.
In my opinion, it's probably probably the better run between the two in terms of prospects. Everything has come together for MTN in Nigeria, so that obviously just was an excellent tailwind for the stock. So still in terms of operationally and growth prospects, my preference is MTN, but I'm not sure how much is left in the stock at this price.
Yeah, certainly it has, and I think to a degree it's de-risked itself. If we go back to 2015 when it was ignoring regulators, it seems a much better management team there. We will leave that there, Common Mpwani. Portfolio Manager, Absa Asset Management, appreciate the early mornings over the year.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Vikas Frustenberg. He's head of interest rate process at Future Growth. Vikas, always appreciate the early morning from yourself. Inflation transitory was all the big word, what, 4, 5, 6 months ago. That certainly has faded in the US. If we bring it home to South Africa, we've seen a bit of an uptick in inflation, still within the band. Reserve Bank did raise rates by 25 points to, what, 3.75. Your expectation, inflation looking forward into next year, I mean, certainly we don't have, there's not huge demand, consumer demand to drive it. I would imagine it's probably going to stay in the band.
Good morning, Simon. I think so, definitely. I mean, that's the view at the moment. Yeah, of course, we still expect the rate of inflation to accelerate towards year-end in South Africa. I mean, the number that's going to be released today is probably going to be around 5.5%, but as you indicate, it's still within the band. But I think it's more important to sort of like be forward-looking, and in that case, or in that sense, you know, our sense still is that, you know, relatively benign, the rate of inflation is going to decelerate as we go into 2022. It's very different to, you know, the experience elsewhere in some of the, even in some of the advanced markets, let alone, you know, places like Turkey, where policy management is an absolute disaster. So at the moment, it doesn't look too bad. Obviously, there's a dark side to this. It's partly because you mentioned that we're battling with economic growth in South Africa. We've got a very high unemployment rate. It is very hard for sort of like those price increases to be passed on to consumers. So on the inflation front, doesn't look too bad. Obviously, you know, the reasons aren't great at this point. So I think the central bank is in a position where they do not have to chase what's happening elsewhere. Of course, we expect them to sort of gradually sort of like lift the repo rate, but not nearly as aggressive, you know, in terms of expectations as expressed by the forward rate market in South Africa. That market is way, way too bearish at this point.
Yeah, I take your point on that and agree 100%. The Reserve Bank, I mean, they don't need to raise rates, but do they kind of want to get it back in time, and maybe the time is a couple of years, to the sort of pre-pandemic levels? Or have we kind of found a new base for the repo at around maybe 3.5 to 4.5 or 5%?
I think it's too early to tell. I think we've got to sort of like be careful. We do want growth to accelerate, and if that happens, obviously you need to keep an eye on that inflation dial as well. So definitely lower, because inflation is relatively well behaved, but we need to keep an eye on this animal. SA is small, as you know, in the bigger scheme of things, so things can sort of filter through to us. So we've got to keep an eye on that. So I personally sort of wouldn't mind, you know, there is a central bank to sort of like keep a close tap on this and gradually sort of increase the repo rate. Again, not chasing it and not as aggressively as being priced by the forward market. But let's not lose sight of this animal. The thing with inflation expectations, also, they, you know, here globally, anywhere, it's backward looking, right? I don't think we should make too much of inflation expectations. As soon as this thing sort of like drifts up to 6%, 7%, suddenly sort of like, you know, then inflation expectations tend to move with it, and then you have a problem. So we want to prevent that from happening.
A quick last question. You mentioned Turkey, and I mean, Turkey, yeah, a central bank which is not independent and just a bit of a mess. In stark contrast is South Africa, who, I mean, our Reserve Bank, our MPC committee, I mean, they are world beaters. I mean, we can be incredibly proud of that team and that institution.
Could not agree more with you, Simon. I think it's one of the things that we're definitely getting right in South Africa, is that sort of like central bank independence for the right reasons, and they are responding the way you would expect them to, and not the chaos that we experiencing in a country like Turkey at this point.
We'll leave it there. That's Vikas Fristenberg, Head of Interest Rate Processes at Future Growth. Vikas, appreciate the time this morning and over the course of the year.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At StanLib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Trading with John Bilton, Head of Global Multi-Asset Strategy at JP Morgan Asset Management. John, appreciate the time. You guys just completed the 26th annual edition of the JP Morgan Asset Management Long-Term Capital Market Assumptions. Can you give us a short overview of what the research is designed to achieve and what the key findings were looking ahead to 2022?
Yeah, of course, and thanks for having me on this. So, yes, you're right, it's our 26th annual edition, you know, something that as an organization we're immensely proud of. We've titled this year's Long-Term Capital Market Assumptions, Fading Scars, Enduring Policies, and that really captures the ethos of what we've been looking at. If we go back 2 years at the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, we were all concerned about long-term economic scarring, damaging the potential growth rate of the economy. And we were expecting to see significant bankruptcies and layoffs that would really reduce productive capacity. And that's not the legacy of the pandemic. Instead, what we've seen is that the tools and the policies brought in, both fiscal and monetary, to prevent that outcome is actually what the legacy of the pandemic is going to be. And we actually think that for the next 10 to 15 years, you know, we're going to face a substantial period with significant policy support. So the world we had previously, where we had just monetary policy pushing, we didn't have significant capex or fiscal spending cycles, and we had something of a lopsided economy, is now behind us. Going forward, a little bit more inflation risk. We do face a situation where bond returns are likely to be negative in real terms for G4 sovereigns throughout much of our forecast horizon. We see a lot of potential in terms of returns from equities because we do think this is a decent growth environment. And of course, we have to widen our opportunity set if we are to get towards being able to deliver the type of returns that we've seen historically.
I take your point on that. The supportive accommodative policies, the responses that prevented that economic fall down. What do you expect from central bank tapering programs and a potential impact on asset classes?
Well, I mean, the tapering obviously is a near-term issue with regard to where we are today. And we do expect to see tapering across all of the major central banks in the next year or so because we have been operating with very accommodative policy. So think of this as normalization rather than a tightening. But make no mistake, we expect central bank balance sheets to remain a significant force throughout the next 10 to 15 years. We're not expecting to see a major shrinkage at any time. So how do we actually think about it from asset markets today? Well, I think first and foremost, if we take the short term, the market has absorbed the idea of tapering without having the kind of taper tantrum that we saw back in 2013.
Yeah.
So I think it's actually been relatively well telegraphed. It's arguable that the central banks have, you know, learned from, you know, prior experiences and actually have run this a lot more smoothly. But it also indicates what we can expect from central banks. We think that monetary policy and decisions are going to be telegraphed a lot more in advance. We think that balance sheets will matter at least as much as front-end rate policy. But remember, even if we see tapering, we are going to still be in a world where interest rates, both short and long term, are likely to be below prevailing inflation rates. And that means a world when real returns will be negative for bonds. And that's, of course, if you're a bondholder, means that you've got to think very carefully about those fixed income holdings. But if you're holding another asset, whether it be equities or alternatives, mm-hmm. your discounting rates actually support your forward cash flows. And that's the reason why, despite some of the near-term noise we may see around tapering, we actually think that the environment continues to be very supportive.
You mentioned those economic scars created by the pandemic and then not being as severe as forecasters had expected, growth returning in developed markets. How would you describe the impact on emerging markets in the short and longer term, and particularly once the commodity cycle ends?
Well, I mean, I think that's one of the things we've got to think about. Let's bring it back to the commodity cycle. Is the commodity cycle ending? Mm-hmm. We've obviously seen a very significant jump in terms of commodity indices over the past couple of years as we've seen the goods market really pick up significantly and a lot of activity there. But we do think from our numbers that commodities are going to continue to beat their benchmark, which is global inflation, which mm-hmm. implies that, you know, there's further upside, albeit less in terms of magnitude than we've seen in the past for commodities. So they should be well supported. Also, it's worth bearing in mind that as we move towards a new green future, you know, renewable and sustainable infrastructure doesn't build itself. So there will be near-term demand for commodities. So calling the halt to a commodity cycle, it might be a little bit premature. How does that translate back to emerging markets? Well, the thing to remember is the emerging markets are a very different animal today than they were, you know, 10, 15 years ago. It's less commodity dependent. And obviously there are pockets, you know, mm-hmm. South Africa, of course, being one of them, Brazil, et cetera. But by and large, the emerging markets in equity market terms are dominated by places like China, India, Taiwan, Korea. And the index makeup in these places is much more developed market-like, big tech sector, increasing exposure to consumers. So where do we stand on emerging markets? Well, emerging market growth is still above developed market growth because there's more of a pickup back towards the technological frontier, we feel. So there is a reason to expect EM to be growing more rapidly than DM, but the differential is lower than it was in the past. But the returns are potentially still there, but we have to recognize that the indices themselves are rather different today.
I take your point. And then in your view, for last question, to get strong real returns, what does an optimal global diversified portfolio look like compared to that historic 60-40 equity bond?
Well, at the end of the day, this is part of the issue. So if you go back 10 years, if you look at the last rolling 10-year return of global equities and U.S. aggregate bonds, you know, you were picking up 7 or 8%.
Yeah.
And we're simply not going to see that going forward. So to earn the same amount of return, you have to do something different. There's no two ways about it. You're going to have to take more risk. And the thing that we would argue is that because bond yields are so low, you're not getting a return from your fixed income component. So while it's still important to have bonds in a portfolio, what you can't do is rely on them to give you a reasonable return. So you're putting a lot more risk on equities. You're also looking at using diversification. What other assets give you different moments of risk, whether it be illiquidity risk, international risk, etc., and building that in. So going forward, we can achieve reasonable returns, but we have to think, number one, about using illiquidity, so real estate, real assets, private equity, etc., as well as your public markets. We have to think, number two, about international. Most investors around the globe have something of a home bias, but there's a lot to play for if you look more widely across the globe. And then number three, I think we have to be a little more active because remember, the returns we suggest, and at the moment, we're seeing a little over 4% expected return on a US dollar 60-40. Mm-hmm. Those returns are just the baseline. That's what you get if you buy the market, but you don't take any active or cycle-aware decisions. So taking some of those active decisions is the final part that we think is important in being able to plan and manage to generate higher returns.
We'll leave it there. That's John Bilton, Head of Global Multi-Asset Strategy, JP Morgan Asset Management. Appreciate the time.
That's it for today. A poll yesterday on our LinkedIn and Twitter account. We've been chatting with Andreas van Heerden from Afrimat about their more recent acquisition and the bedding down of some of the earlier ones that are sort of coming to fruition. And we asked if Afrimat was in your portfolio. Little under half of you said it was. And about the same number said, no, it wasn't, but that you were keeping an eye on it, with a few percentage points of you saying, nope, you had sold at higher prices. And congrats to you, because obviously that was, as we saw, iron ore at significant higher prices. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. This is our final live show for the year. We've recorded up until Friday 24th, back live 10th of Jan. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchli, Nicole, that's my core team. Of course, there's the MoneyWeb team, Masekhla, Danika, Matapela, John, Jono, Eleanor. Thanks to my guests for their early morning time and to you for listening through the year. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. Stay safe over the holidays. We'll chat again in the new year.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news, MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.